You can fight battles on by electronic means with displays and things, just as though you're in a ship. And you relearn your tactics over and over again because they change and change. And that's why I think the Canadians were so good at the ASW business. We did nothing else but go in and out of that place, and new ideas were tried, new tactics were tried, all inside that dark house, all in by people who were in the sea, of the sea, or under the sea, all their lives. And you cannot take an amateur sailor, put him in whatever kind of electronic gadget you like, fighting machine, and send him off and expect him to be able to have the capability you want. It isn't something you can just learn back in Moose Jaw, thank you very much, is what the chief of the air staff figured. What CAO wanted. CMO said, no, you're just prolonging your existence by going into this silly business of having your own command. You don't realize it, General, but you are being, once more, as you were back in unification days, forced by the horror of going out of existence as a separate air force into doing this ridiculous organization of having a separate air command. I thank you. And they said, well, we've heard all we need from you. How would you like to go to Brussels? And I said, no, thank you. I would rather go down to Chester. And so I retired.
They wanted you to go to NATO?
Well, they said, we've got a job for you in Brussels, which is a kind of a joke, because we always figure that when they don't want you in Ottawa anymore...
Brussels.
Brussels is
Siberia.
Very senior officers sprinkle. They always have great slots over in NATO. They're great... Their positions, 2 and 3 stars, like cordwood, you see. So in my opinion, this is mine, I always, you waited, and every time they didn't know what to do with you next, they said, don't, we can't send this guy down to be maritime commander. He is going to fight this Air Force scheme. On the other hand, the man who did become maritime commander went along with it. He's retired too just recently. Doug Boyle went along with this thing, and I hope one day he sees the thing fried as a result. Because he went along with it.
Well, he's a bit on the haywire side, is he not?
Well, what do you mean haywire?
Well, isn't he the fellow that's been mouse-gunned up? Didn't he just pack it in?
There's prickly lot of sailors. But anyway, maybe he had to. Maybe he had to go along with the thing, but I didn't. And I was not, and as I told everybody came, I said, I am not going to have anything to do with this new organization. I think from a military, strategic, tactical point of view, it's suicide. And with that, I always have a nice fire engine to go over the side on.
Sure.
So with that business, with my halo all brushed up, and my, you know, the only real military man in all of Ottawa stepped down and went away. That's the kind of thing, that makes you feel good. So it made it.
There's no coercion put on you to step down.
Oh no, 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 no. There's no, never that. They just say, we're thinking of sending you to Brussels.
Brussels.
Would you like to go? And my wife said, no way do I want to go to Brussels. Mm-hmm. My French is not good enough, and I'm not a NATO. I've never been one of those organization guys.
You'd have a badge to hang on your...
Oh, yeah, great. I probably have another star, too. And, it wasn't. It really wasn't a great thing. I would have had to retire at 55 in 1976, and I went at 54 in 1975. No, I went at 1976, I actually left, I guess. I had 36 years in, so I couldn't get any more pension, if that was a reason. But I really think, in my own heart, that I couldn't really see myself getting along with this thing anymore. I was not very
good. Were you soured by the service? What happened to the service?
No. Never been soured by it. No, I think it's a... I go back and look at it now. Well, I never got soured with the idea. I just thought the whole thing was rather... Well, I guess I'm part actor. And I always thought I would have made a very good, part of Doyle Cart and Gilbert and Sullivan, you know. I could have made a very good part of the Mikado thing where I always said that Ottawa was like a Gilbert and Sullivan opera because the music was great, but you never really quite got the words. The words went by so fast. It seemed to me in my last, looking back, in my last few years anyway, that it became more and more a Gilbert and Sullivan act. The most ridiculous things from the military point of view, or maybe the old always look at it this way, after all those years of service, you get set in your ways, but the things we were doing to ourselves in our organization, you know, we suddenly began to increase. Everybody was a corporal,
yes.
You know, everybody was a general. Everybody had to get promoted. It had to be Snuck's turn. Nobody wanted to say, sorry, Buster, you stop at a major, or you stop at this. No, the tough selection system, it seems to me that everybody was being made admirals and generals, including myself. I wasn't sour with it. I was just amazed at the scenario.
Yeah.
And it's kind of changed. It's changing a bit. And the most difficult period, I think, the most difficult thing about it is nobody would laugh. Now, I've been a joker all my life, and I stayed alive that way. And I could not. I had the greatest difficulty getting people to laugh at themselves. In this thing, no sense of humor up there. Oh no, everything was, you know, big executive, wrinkled forehead.
That's university. That's,
you know, when I started, writing to work, you know, I used to ride to work on a bicycle all the time. The last two times I was an Ottawa, as a commodore and as a rear admiral, I rode to work on a bicycle because we always got a house on Dow's Lake. We had a house there, we owned one, and then we rented one. And it's a beautiful ride along that canal, you see. 3 miles to work along the canal. So I'd get myself a bicycle and a tracksuit, and I would arrive. And when the new headquarters building was built, those two great big towers, and we moved in, along comes this two-star in his tracksuit, you see, and parks his bicycle and locks it, and climbs into the elevator and goes up to his office and changes. And one day the chief of defense staff saw him standing there and said, that's a peculiar uniform, Richard. And I said, yeah, I just put on my bicycle outfit. I was told I should not ride a bicycle to work. And I told the guy who told me that he could drop dead. I shall do what I like on the way to work. It was this kind of inability to... Now, this was not long ago. Now, of course, riding a bicycle is everything. Big energy saver.
Maybe all the boys should be riding bicycles.
As a commodore, when I was in 1967, 68, when I was riding along the road there on a bicycle... I got into all sorts of problems. You know, people said, it's undignified. In fact, my staff, on such a joke, they put a one-star flag, you know, one-ball flag on my bicycle. Stuffy and humorless. And God help us, if a military man becomes humorless and stuffy, I don't want anything to do with it. Because he's one of these dumb guys. He'll have his head up and looking the wrong way when the bullets are flying around, you know. Anyway, it was this particularly lack of humor. You know, everybody took everything to heart. I couldn't even make a joke about what was going on. It was so serious, this business of the air command. So serious. Because a lot of people think because you have a sense of humor, you're a lightweight.
That's right.
I've often kicked a guy in the balls just when he thinks I'm laughing. It works quite well. He doesn't know. No bitterness at all. I think I just ran out of my time. It was a new era coming along, in a way, there didn't seem to be any more room for fun.
But you had all your fun in the RN. You were in the wrong service.
Oh, no, I had more fun over here.
Sure.
You know, court-martialing and driving that vessel, Skeener, and, I had some fun with the 1st Escort Squadron, too. You know, we blew the ass off Kootenay. No, off Nipigon. It wasn't very funny, but...
But the Mediterranean Fleet playing pirate, jumping ship.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Those were the days.
Your wonderful years in Asia. I mean.
Yeah. Well, all right. It was a kind of an end of a... Perhaps I wasn't... it was the end of a swashbucking era. They couldn't... Anyway, I went far enough, for heaven's sake. I never intended to go that far in the first place. One never thought that one would go that far. I couldn't take the thing seriously.
What do you see for the future of the forces in Canada, though?
Oh, just fantastic. Well, and, you know, it's... they're like death and taxes. They're going to be with us forever.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be silly not to have the best we can buy. I don't know that we're getting the best we can buy. I could give you another dissertation on what I think we ought to buy long before we buy toys for the boys.
What should we buy?
We should be in the surveillance system, the sophisticated, high-grade... surveillance system. We are. The Canadians were very good at this, and very unsung, unknown service. Sat around the Arctic with their radio sets from World War II onwards, and of course run by the Navy. And out because why? Because we were the only
Navy
outfit.
The silencer.
No, the Navy was the only people who understood radio. Telegraphy. I'm not kidding. There was nobody in the Navy has always had to talk to its ships on Cape Town, So we were radio, if you looked at the armed forces, the people who really had the radio equipment were the Navy, and we had the technicians, so we ended up with this job. That's the old Y service, and it's still in existence, but it's got much more sophisticated, but it's going out of existence. The SOSUS system, the submarine detecting system, we don't own it. We own one part of a network of it. The Americans are sitting on our land with these systems, defending the continent. We should be doing this. We should be in that business. We're just on the edges of it. We should be spending $4 billion on that. Both aerial, satellite, subsurface, surface, every electronic transmission that comes out of Europe should be our business. We should do this for the defense of the continent. And we would get the... We'd be doing our share of our defense at not a great price. Never mind what you do. Worry less about what you should do when you find out the enemy or the opposition is doing something it shouldn't do. So you haven't got anything to hit it with but an old baseball bat. That costs money. Baseball bats cost money these days. Let your friends build the baseball bats, but let you be the know what's going on. The man with the knowledge is a man in power. And we have got all this huge expanse of land facing the opposition of today. And we need to put in my opinion, the most, all our money, first and foremost, into defense money, into setting up modern surveillance systems. The Americans have them, but they're flying around over us. We should take over what they've got. We should train our forces into that business first and foremost. Intelligence gathering is the first requirement of defense. Even if you haven't got anything to stop the guys coming, at least you know they're coming. You know what they're doing. Now, we used to be, we started in the SOSUS system. We started in way back in the what they call the Y, the radio fingerprinting game. And we have got practically none of that know-how left. The last stations are being shut down. Now, the reason they were shut down is because newer systems took over, and we didn't get into it. Instead of that, we bought what? Tanks. Leopard tanks. Who needs them? We're buying a fighter. Do you want to hear my story about how much we need a fighter?
Sure.
Well, I can tell you, we can do everything that whatever they're buying in a black box to half the price. I've told you once, so that's...
What do you mean by a black box?
Well, a missile.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do... They say, well, we need this $2 billion airplane to do what I call aerial coast guarding. Mm. Well, maybe we do. But nobody's coming at us with bombers, and you can't hit missiles with that thing we're buying, so who needs it? We should be doing other things, and my suggestion is it should be super surveillance first, and then see how much treasure we have left in the country to produce sophisticated baseball bats to hit the people that are coming in, or hit the opposition, or deal with the problem when we found out what it is. We have friends who have all that expensive equipment. They seem to be able to afford it, although they're straining themselves a bit, but we would be well accepted by them. There'd be less of this business of why don't you Canadians do more to keep that great Garden of Eden of yours safe than what you're doing. You don't do anything. You've got these little tin pot amounts of forces that when all put together can't, you know, peel the skin off a rice pudding. It's true. We can't possibly defend ourselves. We could never defend ourselves with the population we've got or the money we've got. But if we go a long way towards it if we put up surveillance systems. That's what we should be in. We should buy no more airplanes, no more ships, no more submarines, no more tanks until we have got in place both surface and air surveillance systems. And then you'll see how our status in NATO would grow. Because we are physically fixed. Where do you think the next argument's going to be? Where are the great arguments? Who's going to be in the argument? The Americans, the Chinese, and the Russians. And where do they meet? In the Pacific. Not in the Western approaches or along the Rhine, where our forces are now. Or running out of Halifax. Not in my opinion. It's going to be out here. The argument's going to be somewhere out there in the Pacific. And our land mass faces that portion of Asia, which is going to be troublesome. And if we use that platform as our surveillance systems, we'll buy ourselves into the hearts of everybody in the West. End of the sermon. I bet nobody has heard that before. No. When I pitched that as CNO, saying, stop buying toys for the boys, it became a... The press got a hold of that little statement. I've never seen so many generals and admirals and people go white round the eyes. They didn't even understand. They took it as an insult that we were buying toys for the boys. That's what we do. We spend millions. And it became a sort of cliche. They said, oh, there's that guy Leo, one of his cute phrases again. They wouldn't listen to what was coming behind it. Okay, now you've just had a strategic lesson. Mm-hmm. What to do with the money we've got. We don't have much. Any more questions?
Well, I don't know. I guess I better let you go. I promised I wouldn't keep you as long today.
But you can suit yourself. What else can I talk about? I think I've told you it all. There are two things. There are just two things I think our country needs. Is a center of strategic studies and a surveillance system. And any time they want a good admiral to be part of the center of strategic studies, blow a whistle. That's what I hang around the Reg Roy and people like that to, because we get a certain amount of going. The country needs it badly. I don't suppose our present prime minister even thinks about it, but then he doesn't not known for that kind of thinking.
No.
But it's we have lots of talent to do it, and you know, a center of strategic studies is not made up of a bunch of old retired military nitwits. You have the best brains in all sorts of fields. We have more universities than anybody else per square minute per mile or whatever. We ought to have a lot of spare brains around, and we have them. At the moment, if you want to know anything about strategy or something else, you have to go and read the Globe and Mail, where a guy called Hot Ayres writes, and another good writer, but I don't think he's very clued up, is Gellner. And every time you want to know anything about anything, you just put out Arms and Doctrine. Look at the names down there. None of them have ever fought.
International Journal, Canadian Institute of International Affairs. Gellner, Gray, Critchley, Stubbs and Ranger, Dunn, Hilmer, and Naylor.
Not a one of them have ever seen a shot fired or been to school or done anything. And that is those are the men in Canada. And I'm not knocking them because they write. And the one missing there is Ayres.
James
Ayres, or Hot Ayres as we call him. He pontificates as the greatest living expert in military strategy for Canada. Well, considering our military history, maybe that's all we deserve. But we've got the brains to do better, and we haven't got one.
Let her go?
Yeah.
Thank you very much, sir.